Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and each week this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. Answers Network will address many ways of creating greater health, joy, and love for you and your loved ones. And we will introduce you to top professionals and talented authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, I'd really appreciate it if you could all do me a big favor. Please forward at least one of our shows to your social media group and to someone you know who can benefit from today's show. This is one powerful way we can make a positive difference together. Now, before we get to our guest, I want you to know that I am grateful to all of you that take your precious time to listen to this show, and especially those that send in questions, comments, reviews, and suggestions, because please remember, this show exists for you. Now, if you haven't gotten your free copy of the Attitude of Gratitude Journal, please go to our website at answers.network and download a free copy. Give it 21 days and comment on whatever platform you listen to us on, what focusing on gratitude has meant to you and your family. I want you to know that I got a message that came in last week after the show, and they said that they had gotten the Attitude of Gratitude Journal and that they had been reading it at the dinner table with their children. And they said that it's one of the things that has helped them so much get through this difficult time during the COVID pandemic, because it felt like it gave their children an opening and a way to talk about the things that they were grateful for, and at the same time, talk about the things that were bothering them. So think about that, that this is something that can help all of us communicate better. Now, a quote, and although not from the journal, it does touch on today's subject. And this one reads, "Before you are a leader, success is all about growing yourself. When you become a leader, success is all about growing others." And so with that, I think that it does lead right into our topic today, which is also the title of our guest's new book, You Can't Run Away From You, Journaling the Rise of Manhood, Volume 1. Now, our guest, Anthony Brinkley, is an established leadership expert, author, resiliency training coach, and change agent. He is the CEO of On the Brink Consulting, a leadership development firm providing expert resilience training, motivational speaking, and team building to the military, the government, large corporations, private groups, as well as not-for-profit entities. And prior to starting his firm, Anthony served in the United States Air Force for 20 years, holding a variety of leadership positions, including principal advisor to the commander on all enlisted issues, and was responsible for all personnel, logistics, and workforce development matters. He is also one that is deeply involved in his local community. He also received the recipient of, or he was the recipient of the 2003 Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Humanitarian Award for Community Activities in Tampa, Florida. Now, Anthony is extremely grateful and appreciative of everyone's support and love. He expresses that truly this process has been guided by the hand of God, and his advice to everyone is to continue to reach for the stars. I love that. Anthony, welcome to Answers Network.
Alan, it is it's my esteemed privilege to be here, because as you said in your opening about gratitude, I love what you said about that, because I actually wrote two daily devotionals that are focused on gratitude. And a lot of times when we talk about gratitude, we'll tell people to say what they're grateful for. And someone said something to me before, they were like, well, okay, I can say I'm grateful for my family, but they said, take it to the next level and say why. Because when you say why, it takes you to a deeper level of appreciation and it makes it sink in. So I would just tell you one thing I'm grateful for, are platforms like yours and the opportunity to share and actually learn from you as well as we speak light into this world, which I think needs it right about now.
Amen to that. Now, your story in particular is really an inspirational story in itself, and one that I think young people really need to hear. Is that what motivated you to write the book at this time?
To be quite honest with you, the answer would be no. And I'll tell you why. So I wrote about this in the book that you talked about, You Can't Run Away From You. Well, what happened to me was when I was 5 years old, I was in pre-K. So I thought we were going, my parents said, hey, we don't have to go to school today. So we were going for this ride. And about 3 hours later, we ended up at this medical facility. And I didn't know, because my parents didn't tell me till we got there, that I was the reason for this journey that we took. And that became an odyssey for me. I was going through radiation, chemotherapy, and other forms of treatment for 6 months. So from that point, I had abandonment issues. I was angry. I had separation anxiety. And so as I grew into a manhood, I would sabotage relationships, anyone that got close to me. So to your question, the book really became cathartic. I started journaling about my life and my orientation to myself and in the world. And some people happened to see my journal and they said, wow, this kind of helped me reflect on my life. And so the genesis of the book was really me writing to myself about myself, but it's actually become a tool to help other people reflect and introspect.
Well, and that's exactly my point, because what I was trying to get to was releasing it now because of the fact that you talked about feeling abandoned. You talk mm-hmm. about a lot of things in the book. Well, we're going through this very, very different time in our history between the pandemic, between a lot of the divisiveness and things that are going on. And as I was going through the book, and I was thinking, wow, choosing to put this out right now just seems so perfect. You know, as if, again, you know, it was meant to be. So,
well, you hit it on the head, because I was torn, because I had done some stuff with this book before, and I'm actually working on my fourth, and it was like this voice, and I know it was the voice of God, said, no, you need to go back and you need to put that book out that you sat down. So for me, I just realized that, I mean, I talk about this in my training, where it's typically not the schedule test that gets you, because you know it's on the schedule. So even if you're not going to study hard, if you're going to show up to class, you're going to prepare a little bit. But what typically gets us in life is the pop quiz. You come to school one day, say, hey, everybody, hey, Alan, put your stuff down. We're going to do something a little different. And if you were like me and you didn't prepare, you broke out in a cold sweat.
Yep.
And so, because I knew when I came home, my mother was going to drop kick me. So my point is, our country got hit. Our nation got hit. Our world got hit with a pop quiz. Our generation have never experienced a pandemic like this. The racial, the social upheaval, the economic, crashing, and all the things associated with what's going on. So I think for us, what a pop quiz does, the good thing about a pop quiz is it's never been a final exam. So mm-hmm. what we have to do, Alan, is we have to evaluate what we got wrong on this pop quiz, because we know that it's just a portion of our final grade. So we get a chance to circle back, whether it's relational, whether it's financial, whether it's spiritual, and prepare to do better, because the world needs more shows like this. And the world needs to understand that even though you might have failed that pop quiz, you're still in the game.
Well, and thank you for that. And I love that. And it's interesting, because one of the thoughts that I had going through your book was, what we need is more leaders. What I see is we've exposed a lot of leaders that have failed. And I think now we have a time in which I think that a lot of young people are going to be able to see that they need to step up. So training leaders, as you're doing, I think is one of the most important things that we can be doing. So believe me, I'm very thankful to what you're doing.
Thank you for that. And in my 28 years of being in the Air Force, And, you know, I led over 100,000 people. I'm not trying to say I was a great leader. I'm just making a point. I have a perspective in regard to leadership. And I used to have this saying to people. I said, if you call yourself a leader and no one's following, I submit to you, you're simply going for a walk. And so a lot of people, what's happened now, Alan, is that even though times have gotten dark metaphorically, when you shine a pin light in dark, that thing radiates and it penetrates the darkness in a significant way. So I think right now there's so much white noise out there because people are home and they have access to social media and other platforms. And there's a lot of people, to be honest with you, that aren't saying anything. One reason I'm on your show is because you're saying something and what you say needs to be heard. And so I'm saying that to you to say that although that these times are challenging, true leaders, they step to the fore when opportunities present themselves. They don't even look at it like you don't get to pick your challenges. You just decide to say, is this the time I'm supposed to step up? And I believe people like you from different backgrounds and perspectives and persuasions are going to be the ones that's going to let our better angels come out and we're going to be better for it collectively.
I love that. And I'm glad that that I get the opportunity in doing this show to be able to speak with many people that I think are making a difference, which is, again, one of the reasons why I constantly tell the listeners, you know, share these things with other people, get them to start looking at different positive things and not just this show, but any show to where somebody is saying, I'm taking this time to present ways in which we can all do better, not seizing this opportunity to somehow exploit your ears or exploit your eyeballs by instilling fear. That's not what a leader does. And I'm sure that, you know, with you being in the military, I mean, it would not have worked in any military situation that we've ever been in history if we had leaders that said, okay, we're all going to be scared, go hide.
So I'll say this to you. Back in the 90s, Desert Storm, Desert Shield took place. Desert Shield, Desert Place. And then there was an operation called Desert Fox. So Desert Fox was one of the peripheral operations after Desert Storm. So I had to go over there, and I was leading a bunch of folks. We were doing mid-air refueling to support the mission on the ground and things of that nature. And we were sitting in this terminal about to take off. And while we were watching the news, the place that we were going, they were broadcasting, it was under attack. And everyone looked at me, and because I was in a leadership position, and they were like, what are we going to do? And I'm saying to myself, I couldn't use my outside voice, but my inside voice was like, man, I'm sitting here with y'all. You know, like, I don't know. But what I said to them was, listen, we're going somewhere. We're going to apply the training that we have. And those folks over there, they don't care if you're black, white, Christian, Jew, agnostic. They're going to try to kill every American nation. And so when we're going to apply our training and we're going to have each other's back, we're going to have each other's six, and we're going to all come back. That's what we're going to do. And we went over there, and the people performed very well. And I'm saying that to you to say, I really wish that our government and other entities functioned like our military, because we don't get to pick who's next to us. And also, we don't get the time. We don't have time to pontificate on who did something wrong. We have to fix it, and we have to engage with what we have. You know, there's an old story in the Bible where, you know, Moses got, he was a little nervous about where he was going, and he was like, you know, I thought you were going to lead me, God. And God said, look, what's in your hand? And he said, I have this staff. And he's like, well, give it to me. And if you commit what you have in your hand, whether it's your talent, your time, your opportunities, if you just give me what's in your hand and trust me, I will lead you in places you didn't know you could go. So I say to all your listeners, look at what's in your hand. If whatever's bothering you, that's where your ministry is. The reason that you have this show, Alan, is because something bothered you about what wasn't being said. Something kind of, you know, pricked your conscience about what wasn't being discussed. And the thing that bothers you, it's not there to simply bother you, it's to compel you to do something about it. And you do something about it by simply assessing what's in your hand. And that's why I wrote the book. I had stuff on my mind, and I said, this is something that people need to hear from my perspective. And I'm going to challenge them to take what's in their hand and make the best out of it. And that's what we're doing right now. And I'm glad to be a part of this with you, my friend.
And thank you for that. And believe me, the feeling is mutual. I love what you said. And right now, one of the things that when I get a chance to speak, and prior to COVID, I was doing it more frequently, but speaking to young people, and one of the things that I kept hearing over and over again was they feel like the odds are stacked against them.
Yeah.
You know it's and they continue this, you know, and again, because they're watching the news or they're watching whatever. And with some of the people that I've talked to, they've said that it's even worse now. And one of my companies works with at-risk youth. And that's one of the things to where they're saying that, you know, anxiety is high, depression is high, drug abuse is high. What is your advice to these young people who feel like the deck is stacked against them to be able to get them to move forward and to take what it is that's in their hand and make a positive difference?
So let me circle back and answer your question this way. I'm sure you already know this because you're very smart, but in America, 50% of Americans experience trauma before the age of 14. Before the age of 24, that number increases to 75%. So basically what that means is, you know, pretty much a vast majority of Americans have experienced trauma, whether it's sexual assault, some other form of violence, or they witnessed something, or they were engaged in something that just, you know, they shocked them. And oh, by the way, your brain is not fully developed from a physiological standpoint until around the age of 25. So when you start talking about young people who are traumatized, again, that's why I wrote about this, because I was a victim of trauma by what I saw. You know, when I was a young man, you read about it in the book. I saw someone get killed in front of me when I was walking home from school, had a gun pulled on me when I was walking home from school. So when a lot of times we try to tell people that's traumatized, get over it. No, we say stuff that's wrong, like forget. No, you can forgive, but you can't forget. For example, if you come to my house, Alan, and rob me, I can forgive you for robbing me, but I need to remember that you robbed me. I don't need to forget. So when you come to my house again, like, well, you know, I forgave, but I need to watch him just a little closer. So I tell people to forgive and remember. But what you do is, for young people, acknowledge the feeling, allow them to feel it, and then help them to express. Because remember, their brains aren't fully developed till 25. So when we see people act out in indiscriminate ways or ways that don't seem measured, we shouldn't be surprised by that. So if we tell people to deny how they feel, no, let's have them acknowledge how they feel, unpack how they feel, and then look at ways that they can affect, you know, what happened to them moving forward. So I tell people, no, we address, we go right at it. And then we say, look, what happened to you, although you may see this going on around you, what goes on around you does not have to define you. Let it develop you. So my thing is, look at it, feel it, and then understand, can you be self-healing after you got the feeling out? And if not, we talk to people like you, Alan, or organizations that you're associated with, and then those organizations can help us heal ourselves moving forward.
I love it. We have some questions that are coming in, and I see one that I think is a very good fit. I want to take this time to thank all of you that take your time to send in these questions. I know that many of you at work, oftentimes they come in actually before the show and ask that we ask these questions during the show. This one reads, my elders were all military and I feel so proud of our family values. My son told me recently that he was considering entering the Navy after graduation. He loves to read and I was hoping to buy your book for him for his upcoming 17th birthday. I thought it might give him some insight into what to expect if he goes that direction. Also, do you think a military life is one that you would recommend for a young man, given the uncertain times we are living in today? And this is from Gloria in Atlanta, Georgia.
Well, Gloria, first of all, thank you for participating. If you're interested in the book, you can get it on my website. It's chiefanthonybrinkley.com. That's where you can get the paperback, Chief Anthony Brinkley, or the Kindle version is on Amazon. You can also get the other version on Amazon as well, but it's chiefanthonybrinkley.com. Now to your question. So here's the thing, Gloria. for me, the military, I grew up in a very challenging environment. I'm not making excuses like my life was hard anyone else's. But what the military provided for me was structure. I came from a, you know, what you would consider a broken home. There was love, but there was, you know, there was just some things we weren't fully developed in. The military gave me structure. It gave me a sense of purpose. And, you know, the main reason I left was because I say this jokingly, but in my family, when you turned 18, they brought you to the kitchen, had you pull out your favorite dinner plate, and they broke it. They said, well, you got to figure out where you're going to eat now. So when my dinner plate got broken, I went and I swore to, you know, support and defend the Constitution. I will tell you that in America, to your question about the viability of someone going to the military, every day in America before COVID, 7,000 people died. 7,000 people who thought they were going to wake up today didn't. 7,000 who think they'll wake up tomorrow won't. So if you extrapolate that out over 365 days, that's 2.5 million Americans that drop off the planet. To me, the military, you know, we're trained very well. We typically, you know, people think about combat, but I tell people growing up where I was worse than anything I saw in the military. So is there an opportunity for you to, you know, your nephew to get exposed to something? Absolutely. But if your nephew's looking to to me, Alan brought this up earlier about young people and their lifestyle. The number one thing I believe you can give a young person is exposure. So by you exposing them to a book or my book or whoever's book, that can help you see that there's something beyond the four corners of the block you live on. So exposure through, you know, your aperture that you get to look through, and then physically exposing yourself to different perspectives. I don't want to make this long-winded answer, but I'll make this other point. I had a lot of issues with people who looked like Alan because of my experiences growing up. I had a lot of anger and bitterness. And the military helped change my perspective where people that look like Alan now, I can put in the category of some of my best friends. So if your nephew has the faith in God and he's smart and he surrounds himself with the right people, he's going to be what the Navy needs. And oh, by the way, the stuff that I learned about setting up my business and being able to articulate and illuminate with people like Alan's note. I learned that through the military because I was very unrefined when I came in. I'm sure your nephew's well ahead of me. But I would tell him if it's something he wants to do, they'll pay for his college. You know, they'll get vocational training and he'll see some things and he'll come back, you know, a better man.
All right. The person you're listening to, folks, is Anthony Brinkley. I love this conversation. We're going to take a break. The book we're talking about is You Can't Run Away From You. Journaling. The Rise to Manhood, Volume 1. So for everybody, stay with us. We're going to take a little break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Answers Network.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service, licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers Network, and we are talking with Anthony Brinkley, and we are talking about leadership. And Anthony, one of the things that you refer to in the book, and I'd like you to explain a little more about, is when you refer to the trap of running away or starting fresh somewhere else, and what you must face instead to make a happy life right here where you are.
So I tell people in life, in my training, I put a slide up. It'll say, it'll say the word fake, F-A-K-E. It's time to stop, you know, don't fake life. And it'll cross out the K and make it face life. many of us have been taught to fake life. We'll say stuff like fake it till you make it. And that sounds cool and witty, but okay, if I fake it until I make it, when I make it to this proverbial place, then I don't even know who I am anymore. So what I was taught as a young man is that, you know, you never give a woman all your heart, you know, because that way you'll get hurt. And, you know, but if you never put your all in anything, you're never going to have a chance to get a full return or result. So what I learned was that, one, half of learning is learning and the other half is unlearning. I was taught as a young man, distance equals safety. And that's not true. Distance is equals being isolated. And in most cases, I would submit to you that suicide is simply a lack of perspective. When you run and you hide and you don't face things, then what seemed irrational becomes rational. What seemed unreasonable becomes reasonable. So to me, I kept moving. I kept running because I felt like someone was going to disengage, because when I was dropped off at the hospital, the foundational figures in my life, my mother, my brother, and my father left me. That was my mindset, because my pre-adolescent mindset didn't have the ability to deal with it. Back to journaling the book. So in some of my training, I do an exercise with people and I will tell them to go back to their 5 and 7 year old, somewhere in that paradigm. Say, have a discussion with yourself, because usually around that age, you develop your orientation to the world. I can trust people. I can't trust people. People are good. People are bad. And in many cases, if something traumatic happens to us, we develop a negative orientation to the world and ourselves. So we have to actually go back and talk to that young person and say, look, even though you got hurt, even though people you thought would never leave you left you, you got through it and they came back. And now that you got hurt, you're going to hurt people because you didn't deal with your pain. So when you deal with your pain, see, pain is instructive. If your elbow hurts, it means you should pay attention to your elbow. We've taught people in America, if you have pain, take a drink, pop a pill. Americans make up 5% roughly of the world population. Americans consume 85% of the psychotropic drugs in the world. Which, think about that, 5% of the world population consumes 85% of like oxycodone, hydrocodone, over prescription drugs. I'm not suggesting to you that if you're in pain or you're going through treatment, you shouldn't take some type of medication in correspondence with your treatment. What I am suggesting for everyone's consideration is that it's hard for me to believe that 5% of the world owns 85% of world pain. So the short answer is you have to face what you went through, because that test that you're going to pass will turn into a testimony for someone else. So that's why you can't run away from you.
And I think that goes right to one of the things we talked about in the beginning, about the fact that you do resilience training.
Yes.
And it appears that we have lost our resilience to get through things, because at the same time, when you give those statistics, the other statistics that probably should be added to that is that 5% of us, we probably also control, I don't know the figure, but, you know, half the world's wealth. You know, it's not as if we were saying that we are 5% in a third world country that has very little. We have so much abundance, and yet we have somehow decided that it's not enough, or that we don't have resilience to get through some of the things that we're now making bigger than what they maybe really need to be. That sound about right?
It does sound about right. And the point I would make is that when I tell people, when I talk to people, I said, first of all, you should understand this. It's like 1 in 400 trillion, the odds of you being born. Now, when you look at, I mean, that's just astronomical to be born. Now, you know, conception, it is between 50 and 400 million cells and only one fertilized egg. I don't want to get all deep or, you know, esoteric, but the point is, just to be born, you hit the lottery in life. Yet many people, what happens is they go to social media, how many people validate them externally, and then they are born uniquely original. And then most people die a copy of something they weren't designed to be. So what I teach people is resiliency is a mindset. Resiliency is a way of life. It's not making a good play on the football field or a last minute touchdown. That's an event. Resiliency is a lifestyle, becoming, understanding self-awareness, understanding your proclivities to life, understanding the things that might challenge you, having the resolve to stand up and fight for what's right. So when you have a resilience mindset, you say, "Come, hey, I ain't even supposed to be here." So if I ain't supposed to be here, Why don't I fight to be who I am relationally, socially, economically? But in our country, we have this thing where we get all we can all we get, and then we sit on the can. So my thing is, the best thing in life is to give. I give away so many books because I'm blessed. I mean, I sell books because I need seed to give to other things. So you have to have a business model to be able to help people. But my goal is, as much as come in, I want almost as much going out after I take care of my devotion to God and my family. So yes, resilience is something that people, we talk about it like it's just a word and something we throw around. But it's really about understanding yourself, understanding the things that how you look at things, understanding techniques that you can do to help yourself become better and resolve. And people always say, let's bounce back. No, it ain't bouncing back. Because if you bounce back, you're right where you were. We need to bounce forward. And that's what I teach people.
Anthony, I'm smiling because I'm realizing that you and I were definitely supposed to have this conversation.
Amen.
And I think we're supposed to have quite a few more in the future. When you were talking about the statistics, it reminded me of a young man that I was transporting to a drug and alcohol rehab program in another state. And I was picking him up from his home. And he was complaining about how horrible his life was. And the comment that I made at that time was, do you understand how blessed you are? I said, you are a white male born in Beverly Hills, California. I said, so the fact, I go, you know, you started out this healthy child and you're now somehow so dissatisfied with life that you, in fact, he had nearly killed himself from an overdose, and that's why we were going to the program. But anyway, so yes, I love the statistics and stuff, because it's true that, you know, there are so many blessings, and you can look at it from so many different levels of, you can keep breaking it down from, like you said, you know, just being born, just being born in the United States, and keep going and going and going and get to the point of what the percentage was of you to be in that position.
Right.
You're going to waste it.
So let me offer this to you. One of the things I learned in my training and my research is that I don't try to just compare people's situation to mine or what I came through. For example, like, people can grow up in affluence, but trauma is trauma. Like, you can have trauma through neglect. You can have trauma. I mean, you teach this. You help people. You just said, you transported somebody to treatment. So when people talk about their trauma, sometimes we'll say, well, I don't understand, you know, you had it this way. But it doesn't really, like, when you talk about PTSD or things associated with trauma, it's not the nature of what the stimuli that caused the trauma. The physiological and emotional response to trauma is the same for people. Mm-hmm. So regardless of our zip code, someone wanting to do something in an affluent area is no different than someone wanting to do it in another area. They're just responding to trauma. And I will tell you back to something that I dealt with is that I was in alcohol treatment. I was in different drug treatment when I was a young kid or different. I went to, well, not drugs, but alcohol. But what happened was, I tell people, when you have bad stuff in your life and you run it from yourself, you make provisions to hide what you won't let heal. And this is a point I try to make. I knew I was going to get pulled over for drunk driving. So I used to practice the field sobriety test. I could touch my nose, my finger to my nose, heel to toe. I could do the alphabet backwards, ZYXWVUTSR, all the way to A. And there are people out there that they know that they're making provisions for what they're trying to hide. So the first thing, back to your young man, is like, what is it? What was the nature of your trauma in Beverly Hills? Because we don't know what he was exposed to. And now what we try to do, what you try to do, is to take people's excuses. Well, nobody loved me. You can't say that. Alan's right here driving you somewhere. Nobody cares. No, you can't say that. So one, we let them feel it. And then a lot of times I put you on the clock. I was having a bad day a couple of days ago. I said, okay, I'm going to feel sorry for myself for an hour. Then I'm going to go do something for somebody, or I'm going to get on my knees and pray. I'm going to go for a run. So again, you know, we just have to understand that we have to let them acknowledge the trauma. We can't let them live in the trauma.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree more. We have another question that's coming in, and this one reads, As a Black man of faith, I've been deeply concerned about the protests that have become militant and violent. As a recipient of the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Humanitarian Award, how do you believe Dr. King would respond to the protests of the last year or so? And what do you see as the best path to unity? And this is from LaVon in Los Angeles, California.
Hey, LaVon. Well, you know what? This is what I would say. Well, first of all, I can't speak for Dr. King because that would just be ridiculous on my part. But what my supposition to you would be, one, he would not be towards anything. Typically, when people rage, they're usually unintended consequences and usually innocent people get hurt. However, I was having a discussion with someone because I was doing our training. I was doing focus groups recently here in Florida on the riots. And I said, listen, let me explain something to you. I'm not going to argue about the merits of a riot. I said, everyone in this room would understand that rioting is wrong. However, if you spell the word anger, A-N-G-E-R, then you spell the word danger, D-A-N-G-E-R. America has an unresolved anger problem. And when you don't address anger, anger usually proliferates in a way that becomes dangerous. So I tell people, although I don't agree with riots, I understand you have to reverse engineer a riot and find out what was the genesis of the anger, what caused people to feel like they couldn't speak, they didn't have a voice, that when they had other forms of protest, they were told, we can't kneel, we can't do this, we're not comfortable with your protest. And then when you don't help people regulate their anger and they've been traumatized through their lives and then groupthink takes place, then what do you expect to happen? So what I say is, until we take the time to have honest conversations, factored in with legislative measures and things that address policy matters, that whether it's housing or other things that affect how we live, breathe, and you know, live our lives, those there are going to be things that may crop up from time to time. So to me, Dr. King, he was all about love. L, you listen. I need to listen with my eyes. I need to look at your plight, where you're coming from. I need to squint with my eyes. I need to listen with my ears, not to just try to come back and deflect. But then, and then I observe you. I watch you. I watch how you engage. I watch what moves you in the right direction. I watch why you might be a little nervous about me because I might remind you of something that hurt you before. Then V, I let you know that I value you. Because that's why a lot of people feel like, if you tell me I've never been a part of something, then why should I value trying to be a part of something? And then E, I empower people to go love others. So although the bottom line is, regardless of how Dr. King I felt, if we don't change the conditions in our environment, our communities, we should expect things like this to happen. But if you look at what's going on in our country, there's grassroots movements going on and people are taking positions. They're moving up legislatively. There's different things going on, policing and looking at how we, there's a lot going on. So a person can't hate me enough to make me hate them. Remember, I'm one in 400 million, you one in 400 million. So let's look at the environment, figure out where we fit. The thing that bothers us, let's engage it. And that's not the best answer, but I gotta be mindful of the time. But again, we love, we become knowledgeable, we understand how these things take place, and we go engage them. And you don't listen, my brother always says this, persistence will always overcome resistance. So we just persist. And if we don't, whatever we finish, when God calls us home, we hand it to the next person. And then it's their turn.
I love it. One of the things that I do on the show from time to time, and I've had people comment on it, so they seem to like it, but I call it the magic wand. And I was thinking about it while you were just speaking, and much of what you just said may be what you would choose, but if I'm handing you the magic wand and you can make one change right now, and you have the power right now to swing the wand, make the change, what change do you, Anthony, make?
Well, that's a hard question, but I'll give you, and probably after we get off the air, I'll probably have a different answer. But I would tell you, Dr. King said something. He said, all I want America to be is what you put on paper. And we talk about who we say we're supposed to be and the values that we're supposed to ascribe to. Many times we don't ascribe to who we say we are. And if we just truly, because our founding fathers had some very good ideas about some things and some things they modified through amendments and ratifications, things of that nature. But I would just say, be who we say we're going to be. And I'll make this quick in the word value. We say we value things. We always talk about values, but what we don't talk about as much as how much we value our values. For example, I value the right thing being done. But when you see wrong being done, you value actually not being involved, or you value not having conflict in your life more than you value the right thing being done. So I think as a country and as a collective body and as individuals, as I say this to myself, we need to actually evaluate our values, because when it gets hard, your true values come out. And we saw that recently, you know, as we've been going through some of this stuff in our country. People say they love our country, but they try to destroy it. So, and I'm not even saying what side of issue. That's just a statement. And I'm just saying that to say we hold true to the value. Remember, our forefathers, to paraphrase, said, we endeavor to form a more perfect union, implying that we're not perfect. Meaning that periodically, we need to look at ourselves with a resolute mind, with the mindset to say, we're going to look at things that it's not right, and we're going to do better. Live up to the values that we say we're going to be.
All right. So what I'm seeing now with that magic wand is that you're saying, live up to the values that we're claiming that we have, and we have a constitution, we have a Bill of Rights, let's follow it, and where there needs to be change, let's have dialogue, let's have communication. To be able to still follow the path, you know, of value and of trying to constantly improve upon what it is that we're putting out there.
Well, we start with that reflection, but then reflection turns into introspection. How do I feel about what I reflected on? How do I feel about what's going on? How do I feel about what I observed? And then upon introspection, there has to be a form of correction, whether it's in the form of policy. I've been to juvenile centers. I go talk to people. I talk to law enforcement. You know, I've had issues on both sides with policing. But when something happens, the first person I'm going to call is the cop. But I know this, there are certain things that there, if you look at their lifespan, their domestic violence, you look at negative indicators, when you become a cop, everything just goes through the roof from a negative standpoint, from lifestyle. So they need resilience training, because mm-hmm. if you're coming up to me and you're amped up, you know, I need you, you know, and I'm already amped up, then, so beyond the reflection, beyond the, the assessment of values, we have to be able to hold people accountable. We got people that have been sitting in places too long. They're not doing anything. So, Alan, it's people like you and I, you know, we have to go to those places once we've established ourselves, and we got to be hope to people. Somebody like you told me that I could do anything I wanted to do. But my past experience before that was somebody like you was telling me I could never be anything, and actually did things to tell me that I couldn't rise up to anything. So we have to go change the narrative by being engaged. We can't do it from our nice houses.
Well, that's what we're doing. That's why we're on right now. Now we've got another question that's come in, and this one says, I feel that the desperation of the last year or so that so many are feeling is only just the beginning. How do you see it, and how do you see us turning this around and turning it into a positive?
Benjamin
in San Francisco.
You said
California.
Benjamin? Benjamin?
Benjamin in San Francisco, California.
Hey, Benjamin, you know what I believe? I believe that COVID exposed us for who we are, socially, economically, politically, because everything came to a halt and we got leveled out where we had to look at things. So I'm an optimist because of I realized that people helped me when I didn't want help. I realized that I don't deserve some of the opportunities I had, and people, they engendered themselves to me with kindness and benevolence. So although there are challenges, Benjamin, I believe that there's someone I'll never be able to reach that you'll be able to reach. So life is about preparation. You know, for those of us that believe that's in the Christian faith, Christ prepared 90% of his life for the 10% that was his ministry. So the thing that bothers you that you might say it might be challenging out there, that's true. But what is it that you can do to affect it in an affirmative way? Where can you penetrate that with your skill set and your mind, your mindset and your benevolence? And then you just go there, because to that one person you're talking to, that's you're their world to them. So I don't make it bigger than me. I can't change the president. I can't change Congress or Senator. But I can change where I live. Just like all politics are local, where people live is local. So Benjamin, just by that question that you offered up, I know you're a thoughtful individual. So I would just say, start with your family. Make sure your family right. If there's stuff that ain't going on in your house, make it right. You know, be that man that you called to be. And then as you get that, you start to morph out and make the ripples to the place that you're supposed to go. We all got different fields. I've tended to a different role. I'm picking up, cleaning up stuff in my role. There's an old, you know, Southern saying you have a role. You're peeling up the weeds. And when you get to the end of the role, they say the day is done. Well, that's how God is. You got a role that you have to tend to. And when you get to that end of that role, he's going to say, well done, my good and faithful servant. Don't worry about my role. Can't worry about your role. I'll see you in your role. And that encouraged me to keep going. So, Benjamin, find the thing that bothers you. Find the right forms that you can inject yourself in with that perspective and that action. And you're going to make many people's lives better. I say that to you prophetically.
I love it. Well, Anthony, time has absolutely flown by, but I just want to acknowledge you and thank you for coming on the show, but also for writing the books, for being the man that you are, for making a difference. That's what this show is about. I'm so glad that you're here. You mentioned that you're writing, or I guess, 4 books or whatever. I not only look forward to talking to you off the air because I feel some real synergy, but also when you're ready for these other ones, you have an open invitation anytime on this show.
Well, thank you very much. And everybody, again, if you didn't get it, it's chiefanthonybrinkley.com, C-H-I-E-F, and my name.com.
And thank you. Actually, I had meant to, I was just about to touch on that, but I'm glad that you did. So, so that's the website. In fact, you have actually quite a few. So, we will also post all of these on the Answers Network website. We'll have all of his websites. Is there any other best way to reach you that you would like people that just want to try and
get in touch? They can go to anthony.brinkley@onthebrinkconsulting.com. anthony.brinkley@onthebrinkconsulting. And I'll leave you with this. Benjamin had a really good question. What we're going through, Benjamin and Alan, is bigger than you, and it's bigger than me, but it's not bigger than you and me. So let's keep at it.
I love it. Thank you. And for everybody out there, please, join us next Monday when we are joined by Candace Covington, the author of Vibrational Nutrition, a hands-on guide to the vibrational signatures of the food we eat and how it affects our behaviors, our emotions, and our spirits. And for everybody out there, please visit our website and our archives of past interviews at answers.network, or you can subscribe to the show, which I highly recommend, through iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, YouTube, Spreaker, SoundCloud, and some others, because I have a wonderful producer that keeps adding for us. These are excellent platforms, and by subscribing, they will send it directly to you so that it will be waiting for you on your phone or whatever device you listen to or watch these podcasts on. And if you like what you hear, please leave a review. It will help us reach more people, and I want you to know how much I really appreciate it. Next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember, stop by our page, check out some of our latest posts. You can sort of see the direction that we are going, and if there's anything you'd like to add to that, we would love to hear it as well. For everybody out there, please be good human beings and be with us next week on Answers Network.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.